Well, with chapter 3 of Matthew, we are now beginning the Gospel. And Matthew has four introductory portraits. We're doing a lot of introduction, aren't we? And the four of them are meant to give a central theme to the whole of the Gospel. We'll only do the first one now. The first portrait places Jesus, historically correctly, of course, within the context of the Jewish people. One of his main themes, as I pointed out to you last week, is that Jesus is the fulfillment of Israel. So now we're moving right into history. We're now into memory. Whatever of the first two chapters, which it's very hard to discern between the portrait and biography and history, and we're left with a lot of uncertainties. Uncertainties now leave us, and we're into history, memory, fact. Of course, not just told blandly as fact, but the fact understood with the heart and expressed in the literature of the Old Testament, of music and song and prophecy. But we're dealing with remembered things. And so he begins chapter 3, verse 1. In those days, John the Baptist appeared in the wilderness of Judea, proclaiming, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven has come near." Kingdom of heaven, reign of God, David, all of that has come near. "This is the one of whom the prophet Isaiah spoke when he said, 'The voice of one crying in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord, make his paths straight.'" Now John, says Matthew, was clothed in camel's hair with a leather belt round his waist, and his food was locusts and wild honey. Then the people of Jerusalem and all Judea were going out to him and all the region along the Jordan. And they were baptized by him in the river Jordan, confessing their sins. First thing to do, which you know by now, is to go to the passage of the Old Testament and see where does it fit, what's happening here. So we do that, and it's there in large print. It's actually the opening words of 2 Isaiah. It's verse 3. In fact, there's a couple of sentences before it, but it's the opening passage of that part of the Isaiah scroll, which was written at the end of the exile by an anonymous prophet, disciple, if you like, of Isaiah, but 150 years later. So it starts, "The voice of one crying in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord, make his path straight." What's happening in history is, for those of you who have some knowledge of it, Cyrus of Persia is sweeping right through the crumbling Babylonian Empire, victory after victory, but mostly just welcome. And he has a whole new method of empire building, if you like, which is to let people go home and have their own temples and their own religions, and all he wants is money and tax and trade and a very enlightened, this is Iran we're talking about, an enlightened empire. And Cyrus seems to have been quite a holy man, probably a Zoroastrian. And he's called, believe it or not, stunningly, by this prophet, the Messiah of the Lord. So there's no national bigotry there. He sees Cyrus as God's instrument because it's happening everywhere else. And he says to his own people in Babylon, who never thought they'd ever go home again, "Yes, it's going to happen to us too," he says. "So prepare the way." What to do? To go back through the desert home to the promised land, to relive the history of Moses, to relive what happened to their ancestors right back at the beginning. This is another trek, another unbelievable miracle of God's grace, answering all the prophecies, what like Jeremiah just said, you will be coming back, and here we are going home. I promise you it'll happen. It's going to happen, so get ready for it, he says. Now that's the text. Well, you see the connection, don't you? Here's the last prophet of Israel saying, here's the new Moses preparing all of us for the ultimate journey to the ultimate promised land. Get ready. Make your path straight. Repent. Repent means what? It means, the Greek is metanoia. The noia part, N-O-I-A, is nous. We've got it in English. It's the mind. It hasn't got much nous, we say. Same word. Metanoia is to get your brain and shift it. Look at life differently. Open your eyes, open your heart, open your mind, and get a new view of things. People who are so bogged down in habit and perhaps even tradition, however fine it is, because God's going to explode your mind and it's going to be a new way of looking at everything. So get ready to open your mind or you'll never recognize the one who's coming. That's to repent. The kingdom of heaven has come near. Change your mind and heart. John was wearing camel's hair and so on. That's an allusion, as I'll show you now, to the great Elijah. Elijah is the prophet, prehistoric in the sense of written history. He's talking about the 9th century before Christ. He's not in any of the prophetic writings, but back in the books of Kings, you know about Elijah, I'm sure, on Mount Carmel. And the legends that are attached to Elijah are colossal, and legends often have more reality in them than, well, dare I say, the advertiser. So you're dealing with big stuff here, and this is Elijah. I'm telling you the story of Elijah, and it's too exciting, and I could be tempted to be carried away, so I won't do it. But just a few texts. 2 Kings 1:8 describes him when he enters the stage. One of the kings says, Elijah, I know him, he says. He's that hairy man with a leather belt round his waist. What was our text? Clothed in camel's hair with a leather belt round his waist. See it? This is Elijah. That's what he's saying. He's describing him just the way everybody remembers. And Elijah was remembered in the music of the people in the book of Sirach, Ecclesiasticus, one of the books of wisdom written 200 BC, and a beautiful text when he's going through all the great men of the past and women of the past, but they're nearly all men. Well, that's who writes the history is a good question. And of course, women in those days, they had the best thing to do. They weren't in public life. They were mothers and everything else a woman is in those days. A prophet like fire, they called this bloke, whose word burned like a torch. Don't you reckon that's good? The king, Ahab, used to call him, oh no, he says, not Elijah again. The horses of Israel and its chariots. That was his nickname. The horses of Israel and its chariots. When Elijah walked into the room, everyone said, oh God. Because he galloped into rooms and he kicked and flayed and he was on God's side. And on Mount Carmel, he said to the people, he got them all, they're all hanging around, you know, and he said, look, you lot, and I'm getting carried away, aren't I? Why do you keep limping from one foot to the other? Make up your minds, are you with God or not? And God help anyone who said they weren't with God. And he lined them all up. Remember, he got all the priests, 500 priests of Baal is the story. That's the story. Read it. Book of Kings. And they're all up there on the mountains. He said, you can go first. And they got them to kill a thing and pour and they're going to, if fire comes down from heaven, you win. So the people said, right, that's okay. 500 priests of Baal lashing themselves, telling, crying out all day to God. And Elijah sitting back there smoking, sucking pest palum grass or something and saying, perhaps your God's asleep. A bit louder. Come on. Yell a bit louder. Maybe he's out on a journey. You know, he's mocking them and all. And by the time they're a lather of sweat and a complete mess, Elijah grabs an ox under one arm, wrings its neck or some damn thing, builds the temple with great stones with his left hand, pours water all over the whole thing so there's not going to be any tricks, calls on God and the fire comes down and burns it all. And then it ends up the story, and he himself took the 500 priests of Baal down to the river Kishon and slew them. Whew. Ecumenism, eat your heart out. So that's Elijah. The word like a fire, whose word burnt like a torch. And this is the same beautiful Elijah who went across the desert for 40 days and 40 nights to see God on the mountain. And when he saw God, 1 Kings 19, God wasn't in the thunder. You see, Elijah always grew up thinking God's in thunder. God wasn't in the thunder. Then there's lightning and fire, you know, and Elijah's really at home and God's not there. Then there's an earthquake and he thinks, oh, this is it. God isn't there either. And then it says, then there was the sound of a gentle ruach, spirit, breath. And Elijah went to the mouth of the cave and covered his face with a mantle. He found God in the silence and the whisper. In other words, he was a boy, male bravado, boy who became a mature man. Has that got it right? And learned gentleness. Well, this is the, at the end of his life, we now read 2 Kings 2:11. And you know the story, I presume, of Elijah and Elisha. He threw his mantle over Elisha. So poor old Elisha got a vacation overnight. Because Elijah's not going to muck around and he wants someone to carry on. Any of you thinking of becoming priests? We're running out. So Elijah, a chariot of fire, we're told, and horses of fire, just as it has to be this for Elijah, separated Elijah from Elisha, and Elijah ascended in a whirlwind into heaven. That's the story. Why? Because they thought everybody died in those days. Well, people do die, but they thought that was the end. And before they knew anything about the afterlife, they knew one thing. You can't put an end to Elijah. I mean, some people never die. They don't fade away. So Elijah's taken up into heaven by God, alive. Why? Next tradition. See, he's full of stories, but they're good stories. Malachi, one of the last of the prophets, chapter 3, verse 1. I am sending my messenger to prepare you the way before me. I will send you the prophet Elijah before the day of the Lord comes. Everybody thought Elijah, up in heaven, God's got him there, and he's going to come back and introduce the Messiah. Now, all of that I've told you, Matthew tells you simply by saying, John wore clothing of camel's hair with a leather belt round his waist. Haven't I gone on? But can you see what's in the text? This is Elijah returned. Of course, it's not Elijah, it's John the Baptist. But this is the fulfillment of all those legends and dreams and hopes. In other words, the one John the Baptist is speaking about is the Messiah. Do you get the connection? This is the last of the prophets. This is the one we've been waiting for. That's what he's telling us. And they're there confessing their sins. It doesn't say their sins are being forgiven. That'll happen through the Messiah. But they're admitting their sin. Sin, Greek word for sin, hamartia, means missing the mark. We've already done it quickly when we use the name Jesus, the one who saves them from their sins. And it comes from the image of arrows or spears in war, unfortunately. And so you keep chucking the spear, but you keep missing. You keep firing the arrow and you keep missing the mark. That's sin. So whenever you miss the mark, you're sinning. Don't add guilt to that. Sometimes guilt is absolutely appropriate. If none of you ever feel guilty, come and have a yarn and I'll get you feeling a bit guilty. Because lack of guilt means you've lost all your sensitivity to anything that's worthwhile being. For heaven's sake, if you haven't done any wrong, have a look in a mirror and feel a bit of guilt. That won't do you any harm. There's a bad guilt too, of course, that's inappropriate. But a person with no guilt hasn't looked. And so, yeah, but sin doesn't mean guilt. Guilt should only be there when we are responsible for missing the mark, when we could have hit it but missed it. But most of our life, most of my life, most of your life, most of everybody's life, they miss the mark because nobody's ever shown them how to hit the thing. Isn't that how it is? They just don't know. They haven't been loved enough themselves to know how to love. So they keep belting their kids because Dad belted them. That's how you do it, they thought. And you don't all blush. But isn't that what happens to all of us? We just do the best we can for the most part. But there are times when we could have hit the mark and we did miss it for selfish reasons, laziness and all the rest of the whatever sins you've got. And for that we should feel a guilt and a sense of responsibility. But missing the mark is the problem here. And they're admitting we're missing the mark. We don't know where we're going. And that's a good start that we might listen to the one who's coming who might say, come this way, I'll show you.